So, I'm Chris Segoyan. I work for the ACLU and... ACLU. And so I've been thinking about this talk for a while. Many of us have been trying to convince people and companies to encrypt their communications for a while. And the last few weeks and few years have been a really good time. There have been a bunch of really positive moves in the right direction that I'll talk about today, but I want to get us all the way there. And so I really want to talk today about how we start to get default encryption for everything and how we really start to do damage to bulk dragnet surveillance. So as a reminder, I work for the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. Last summer when I came and gave a talk, we were working at the table. By the way, we have a table in the vendor area where you can get t-shirts like this. And someone came up and said, you know, why aren't you guys doing anything for Ed Snowden? You know, he's really brave. He did this great thing. Why aren't you guys helping him? And my boss, Ben, who is now Snowden's lawyer, sort of smiled at the time and said, you know, he couldn't really say what was happening. So we've been helping Ed for some time. And I don't think it's overestimating it to say, or to say really that we wouldn't be where we are now were it not for his disclosures and his bravery. And the amount of just change in the debate and the pressure on companies to encrypt is really just staggering. And so he couldn't be here. We don't have the Snowbot 5000 walking around the halls of DEF CON, but we do have it in our office in New York. But so Snowden has really made a lot of this a lot easier, and you'll get a feeling for that throughout my talk today. All right, so this woman, her name is Dianne Feinstein. She's one of, yes, you can boo her if you'd like. Only at DEF CON. So she is chairwoman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and I'm going to read you a quick quote of hers from last year. This is after the first few Snowden stories broke, as the administration and the defenders of the surveillance community really started to go on the attack and defend the bulk surveillance of everyone's communications. This is what she said. It is necessary for the NSA to obtain the haystack of records in order to find the terrorist needle. And we hear this a lot, right? They need to do bulk surveillance not because they care about our communications, but because they care about the bad guy, or the bad guys. So there's a problem with this analogy. And this really drives the talk today and drives a lot of the work that I'm doing. And that is that we are the haystack. We are the haystack whose communications are being monitored, and it's not right. And so we can fight in the courts, which the ACLU is doing and other organizations are doing. We can fight in Congress, which the ACLU and other organizations are doing. But we can also fight through technology. We can make it more difficult for bulk surveillance to take place. And really, that's what this talk is about today. How do we use math? How do we use technology to prevent them from collecting the whole haystack? All right, so let's go back in time to 2009. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And for those of us who cared about encryption, who cared about encryption on the web, 2009 was a really bad time. Things weren't good. With the exception of some banking websites that you might use, most of your communications when they went over the web would not have been protected with basic encryption built into all web browsers. Maybe your usernames and passwords would be going over the wire with some protection, but even your authentication cookies wouldn't, and so it'd be very easy for someone to steal your information. And so in 2009, all of the big cloud computing companies and social networking sites and email providers, none of them used SSL by default. This left everyone vulnerable to surveillance, not just by individuals, but by the state. All right, and there's actually a slide that I haven't included in here from a GCHQ slide deck from 2009, sort of in which they're cheering and patting themselves on the back because so many services are not encrypted. Without SSL, surveillance really was just a question of how to do the tap and how to process the data rather than how to break any technology or security. So this is a blog post from Google in 2009. This is when they first announced the availability of an option, a configuration setting to force SSL in the future. This was an option that wasn't turned on by default. It was something you had to go and set. And I'll read it just for those of you who didn't see it. SSL can make your mail slower. Your computer has to do extra work to decrypt all that data. And encrypted data doesn't travel across the internet as efficiently as unencrypted data. That's why we leave the choice up to you. And so this was a false choice. This was a false choice because it was an option that was hidden from most people. If you clicked into the advanced settings in Gmail, it just said use HTTPS question mark. There was nothing to indicate that this was an important thing. It was the 13th of 13 configuration options after the vacation auto away message, after Unicode settings. Most people don't know what Unicode is. And so the user interface of Gmail screamed to users, this isn't important, this doesn't matter. And so to say that this is a choice for the user, it's false. What you're doing then is allowing a system to ship in an unsecure manner and then blaming the user for not seeking out an obscure option and enabling it themselves. So that was Google in 2009. And so what that meant was that for the people who work in this building, for the people who work at NSA, life was good. Bulk surveillance is easy in a world where everything is going over the network without any protection at all. Right? For the NSA in 2009, the internet was an all-you-can-eat buffet. And we know what happens when a society is dominated by all-you-can-eat buffets. Right? The NSA gorged themselves. They gorged themselves till they got sick, actually until one person there got sick and decided to blow the whistle. And so now it comes time to put the NSA on a diet. I'm sorry for these analogies, but they make sense. We need to starve the NSA of the data that they're depending on, of the data that they've come to depend on. And really, so that's because of people like Ed Snowden, that we now have an understanding of what's taking place. We have an understanding of how they're collecting information, which means we then have an understanding of what we can do to stop them. So in the last year, there have been a number of disclosures about particular forms of bulk surveillance targeting internet communications. And these have really, I think it's fair to say, set the internet on fire. So the first slide that really sort of galvanized the tech community was this slide revealing that the NSA was monitoring the links between Google's data centers. Google believed after 2010, after 2010, Google turned on SSL, which was a good thing. That Google believed that they just needed to encrypt the links between consumers and Google servers. Google thought that the private leased line cables that they were renting from companies like Level 3 would never be tapped. And so even though they had data centers in different countries, they thought that they didn't need to protect those links. Well, Google was wrong. Google was wrong, and this slide showed that the NSA and their GCHQ partner had been able to tunnel in to Google's private network and obtain communications that would have never left that network otherwise. A few months later, the Washington Post revealed this slide showing data. I'm going to zoom in a second, but this story revealed that the NSA has been monitoring the address books of many popular communication services, Yahoo, Google, Facebook. The NSA is very interested in instant messenger lists and address books because those show communications, they show patterns, who you're interested in talking to. On this slide, the thing that was the most interesting and the thing that was the most damning for the tech companies was the news that Yahoo users were being targeted successfully by the NSA an order of magnitude more times than Gmail or Facebook. Well, why? Why was Yahoo being targeted? Why were Yahoo users having their address books collected an order of magnitude more times? Because Yahoo wasn't using SSL. Until January of this year, Yahoo wasn't using SSL by default. And the fact that Yahoo is using it now is directly as a result of the Snowden disclosures. So we've seen the tech companies beef up their security. We've seen companies embracing SSL. We've seen them tightening their choice of encryption algorithms. We've seen the adoption of perfect forward secrecy, of HSTS browser headers that ensure that you always go back to the secure version of the website. You never go to port 80. We've seen instant message platforms all migrate to user to server encrypted links. We just saw yesterday Yahoo announce that they, by 2015, will be offering encrypted email to all of their customers, encrypted end-to-end email. Not on by default, but they'll be offering it, and that's the beginning of a path. And so we're really at a point where there's this movement. There's a movement to encrypt all the things. And it's working. We're seeing Yahoo, Google, Facebook, Twitter, Microsoft. We're seeing the technical teams within these companies finally have the power within the organization to get what they want. For sure, there are security engineers within Google and Yahoo who for years wanted this stuff. I'm sure that the member of the people in the Paranoids team at Yahoo, their security team, were embarrassed by the fact that their website wasn't SSL enabled. Professionally embarrassed. But, you know, at the end of the day, they don't choose the resources they're given. And it's very difficult when you're a company that's not doing well, when you're losing users, to justify the expense, both in human resources and equipment, to make that kind of shift, to make that kind of change. And what pressured Yahoo, what got the powers that be to allocate those resources, to hire a CISO like Alex Stamos, was major negative publicity. Front page stories in newspapers around the world showing that Yahoo was being successfully targeted by these intelligence services. So the stories in the newspapers have helped. Naming and shaming has also helped in a big way. Earlier this year, Google released some statistics, some data on websites that do or don't use encryption for email. So we can all visit our bank or email service and look for the lock icon in the URL. You can see for yourself whether the website that you're visiting is encrypting the data to you. It's much more difficult to see whether the emails that you're sending are going over encrypted links the whole way along the path to the recipient. And earlier this year, as recently as January of this year, the answer may have been just 25 or 30% of servers on the internet, of email servers were encrypting. So Google's started releasing this data a few months ago, and it's been really, really useful because it's allowed us to name and shame companies. And the fact is, there isn't a performance reason to not have encryption for web, for server-to-server encryption for email. There's no reason at all. It's simply because no one ever did it. And so over the last few months, I've been calling up the general counsels, the chief privacy officers, chief security officers at companies, and one by one explaining to them why they need to do this, and having this data online, having this website that Google has released, has made it really easy because I have now something in URL form that I can include in an email and say, why are you not doing this? Why do you have an F letter score? And so over the past few months, we've gotten Comcast and Craigslist and Apple and Microsoft. Many, many companies are slowly doing this, and it makes a big difference. Now, to be clear, Start TLS isn't perfect. It's opportunistic encryption, and it's not resistant to active attacks. But if the name of the game is protecting us against bulk passive surveillance, this is definitely moving us in the right direction. So, naming and shaming is one technique. Another one that I know a lot of people in the tech community think is really stupid is gamification, right? This idea of badges. And it's stupid, but it works. That's why every app has built badges into their system. And so what we've seen are two really, really useful and successful examples of gamification that drive the adoption of encryption. The first is something called SSL Labs from Qualys. You can go to the website and type in any other website's name or URL, and then they will run a bunch of tests and tell you how good their SSL configuration is. And more importantly, they give you a letter score. And it's for things like configuration options and algorithm choice and perfect forward secrecy and resistance to the beast attack and other things. And over the last 6 months or a year, we've seen server operators changing their configurations, not because like they're worried about the security of their systems that much, but because they want that A-plus score. Right? And this makes surveillance more expensive. Perfect forward secrecy reduces the risk to users when keys are compromised or stolen or compelled from a company. A couple Norwegian guys created a website called starttls.info that you can, again, visit and type in any domain name, and it'll give you a letter score for the SMTP encryption options. This, you can see the NSA still has not the best score in the world. And this also has been really, really useful in getting people to turn this stuff on. All right, so we've had naming and shaming. We've had gamification. Another method that's worked really well, to be frank, is bribery. So for about the last 6 months, I've been offering whiskey to administrators of servers who turn on SSL for their website, for their websites. I started as a joke, but it's actually working. So the first major site to go SSL by default was TechDirt, specifically citing the whiskey offer. I need to send Mike Masnick a few bottles of whiskey to say thank you. I can't release the secret yet, but I got a really interesting email yesterday from an engineer at a very, very large website yesterday telling me that they will be going SSL by default and specifically asking for whiskey. They didn't even say please. So this stuff works. And then, of course, yesterday, Google announced a huge, huge move in which they are going to be giving a boost in the PageRank scores to sites that are turning on SSL by default. I cannot emphasize enough how big of a deal this is. When you think of all the scummy SEO people, the search engine optimization people, and the tricks that they will pull to get their websites one step higher on the Google results, this is going to be huge in terms of getting websites to do the right thing. And so the combination of the carrot and the stick is definitely moving companies in the right direction. All right, so that's where we've really been in the last couple years, how we've gotten companies to turn on SSL, how we've gotten companies to flip these options when they exist in their products. But in many cases, our messaging could use some work. Not just around SSL, but as we're starting to interact with policymakers in Washington, D.C., some of the messaging that we use in this community works really well for us, but is really scary to the outside world. It's so scary that it hurts us down the road when we're litigating cases. And I'm going to give you a few examples of that. And it's really sort of funny in some cases, but it's funny in a tragic way. And so we sort of need to clean up our act and use a little bit of marketing to spin some of these technologies in a better sounding way. So I'm sure in the last year, many of you have seen companies touting their NSA-proof technology. Of course, this stuff isn't NSA-proof. And there's a debate to be had about the merit of this and whether you should lull users into a false sense of security. But I'm not even going to discuss that. For the purposes of this discussion, the problem with saying that your stuff is NSA-proof is that it strikes fear into the hearts of policymakers. Because members of Congress, they don't want NSA-proof technology. They think that the NSA is generally doing their job. They don't want wiretap-proof technology. They think that police wiretaps are a good thing. You know, again, we can quibble about how often they should be used. But members of Congress, most of them generally support some kind of surveillance. And so if we start touting our technology as NSA-proof, surveillance-proof, FBI-proof, what they see in their mind is technologies that help the bad guys. And that's not good. Right, so this is Mujahideen Secrets, a largely ridiculed terrorist encryption app online. No one really uses this thing, but every couple of years there's a story about how there's a new version of this Al-Qaeda encryption app. This is really scary to people in DC. This is really, really scary to policymakers. And they really believe that this stuff exists. They believe that it's used. They believe that it's preventing the FBI from catching the next terrorist. Right, and so when we use language similar to this kind of stuff, you know, maybe you don't have an AK-47 as the logo for your app, but when we use stuff like this, it looks really, really scary to the people in power and to the courts. So this is an excerpt from a case from the Ninth Circuit from last year. It's called the Cotterman case. It was about a guy bringing a laptop back from Mexico. This is a footnote in the majority decision. From the court saying, we do not suggest that password protecting an entire device as opposed to a files within a device can be a factor supporting a reasonable suspicion determination. This is a really long-winded way of saying that the Ninth Circuit thinks that whole disk encryption is perfectly okay, but per file or per folder encryption is suspicious. Okay, so that's laughable, but these are judges who don't know a lot about technology. They think that the encryption that comes built into your operating system, the whole disk encryption or full disk encryption, is perfectly reasonable. It's a legitimate cybersecurity technology, protects against data breaches. But they think that if individual people choose particular folders to encrypt, that's a sign of something suspicious. So that's what we're up against. We're up against judges who think that just file or folder level encryption is inherently suspect. And so when your app or the program you're using describes itself as a wiretap-proof technology, that judge freaks out. You suddenly look like a bad guy just for using that thing in the first place. And so the message that I'm going to be giving you in the second half of this talk is really, we need our technologies to be as boring as possible. Right? We don't want to be exciting. I know it's great for a DEF CON talk to stand on stage with flashing strobe lights and cool leet speak and talk about how you've hacked this and hacked that, but that's really scary to judges. And so the security and encryption technologies that we are pushing now, that we want the public to use, they need to be non-threatening. Not to the users, but to the courts, to members of Congress, to the FBI. They need to be as boring and standard as possible. So another example of this. There was a Supreme Court oral argument last year in a case called Riley. It was about whether the police needed a warrant to search your cell phone incident to arrest. So you've been arrested for something. Can they look at your phone and download all the documents off your phone? And so there's an exchange between the lawyers who are arguing and the chief judge of the court, Chief Justice John Roberts. And I'll show you the excerpt in a minute, but the gist of this is that Chief Justice John Roberts believes that someone with a single cell phone is okay, but someone with two cell phones is a drug dealer. And this is the excerpt here. Roberts himself volunteers that he thinks that people with two cell phones are suspect. And then one of the lawyers says no, and Robert says, really, what's your authority for the statement that many people have multiple cell phones on their person? Like, Roberts had never met anyone who had multiple cell phones on them, even though probably the majority of the lawyers in the room at the court had multiple cell phones on their persons. So in DC, where I live, people who work for the government are still forced to use BlackBerries. So everyone who has a BlackBerry also has a second phone because they actually want a usable smartphone. Right? So this is the world we live in. We live in a world where having two cell phones makes you a bad guy. And so how do we push back against the courts when two cell phones is suspicious? Well, what that means is if you have an app on one of your two cell phones that lets you make wiretap-proof calls, you are a really, really bad guy. And I don't want you to be a really, really bad guy. And when we end up litigating one of those cases, I don't want our defendant to be a really, really bad guy with two phones and an NSA-proof calling app. Which means don't talk about the NSA. The services that you're building, the cool apps and protocols that you're designing, they need to be boring and they need to not involve nation-state intelligence. By all means, you can do what the Tor project does and talk about your threat model and global passive adversaries and that kind of stuff, but don't talk about the NSA. It doesn't help anyone. So this is, I think, a really good example of this point. This woman is Pamela Harbor-Jones. She was a Federal Trade Commission commissioner. She left in 2010. And she was the first US government official to ever give a public speech in which she mentioned the word SSL. Pretty big deal. She worked at the FTC, which is an agency that I worked at. We overlapped. And in March of 2010, she gave a speech in which she called on all cloud computing companies to turn on HTTPS. She said, today I challenge all the companies that are not using SSL by default. That includes email providers, social networking sites. Step up and protect consumers. Don't do it some of the time. Make your website secure by default. So this is really powerful language, really good language from a senior, presidentially appointed US government official. And what she's calling for is something that we all want. We all want widespread encryption, but what she doesn't talk about is the NSA. Likewise, this guy, Chuck Schumer, super, super law enforcement friendly senator from New York. I mean, Schumer loves law and order. He loves surveillance. This is him in 2011. Providers of major websites have a responsibility to protect individuals who use their sites and submit private information. It's my hope that the major sites will immediately put in place secure HTTPS web addresses. Again, we have a pro-law enforcement senator calling for companies to deploy technology that will make network-based wiretaps more difficult. How do you get a senator to do that? How do you get a senator to call for a technology that makes life more difficult for the police? Bribes is one way. Whiskey is another way. Or you don't talk about the police. Right? We didn't talk about the NSA. These folks didn't talk about the NSA. Instead, they were talking about hackers. Sorry, that's what hackers look like to people in Washington, D.C. You guys have your ninja masks in your bags, right? So they were actually both responding to a tool called FireSheep, released by Eric Butler. This was a easy-to-use graphical user interface, the Firefox plugin, that basically captured authentication cookies as they were going over the wire and let you log into the accounts of other people who were sharing the same Wi-Fi network as you. This was the wall of sheep in browser plugin form. And what made it a big deal was that this was a plugin that anyone could download, and in fact, several million people downloaded it. And then it made it to the New York Times. There was a New York Times story about FireSheep, and then a month or two later, Chuck Schumer is suddenly sending letters to Yahoo and Amazon and Twitter telling them to hurry up and turn on SSL. The way that we get this encryption stuff deployed is by making it palatable to the people in power, by making it seem like an anti-crime technology, an anti-identity theft technology. In 2009, I and 37 other researchers signed a letter to Eric Schmidt, then the CEO of Google, in which we called on all, in which we called on Google to turn on SSL for Gmail. In this letter, we said, we urge you to follow the lead of the financial industry, enable SSL by default. But again, we emphasized that this was because of the huge threat posed by identity theft, that Google should protect its users. We didn't mention the NSA. We didn't mention the police. This was criminals at Starbucks. Now, of course, you know, Bruce Schneier and Ron Rivest, when they're signing this letter, they know about bulk government surveillance. But you don't have to advertise it, right? Make it easy for the people in power to do the right thing and take advantage of the boogeymen that we have, which in this case are identity thieves. The other thing to note is that in the United States, we don't have a privacy commissioner. In Canada, in a bunch of European countries, they have privacy commissioners who are responsible for all things privacy. We don't have that in the United States. We have the Federal Trade Commission, which regulates deceptive business practices. They go after tech companies for lying about privacy. We have the Federal Communications Commission that goes after obscenity, like Howard Stern on the air. And they go after the phone companies. We don't have a national privacy regulator, which means if we want these two regulators that we already have, if we want them to do something that we care about, we have to portray it in language that they understand. We have to make it seem like it's consistent with their mission. So the Federal Trade Commission cares about identity theft. The Federal Communications Commission cares about the security of phone networks. And so if we want these people on our side, if we want them to write nasty letters, if we want them to give speeches, if we want them to pressure companies, we need to help them to do so, and that means not talking about the NSA when we're talking to them. By all means, we can talk about the NSA in this community, but when we're talking to outsiders, we have to use language that isn't scary to them. And so what that means then is that we need to start talking about cyber. So, you know, I know that there are many people who think that the word cyber is stupid, who think that it's ridiculous that people in suits talk about cyber as though it's something serious. There are many people who, when you hear the word cyber, you think of something that looks like this. You know, it's really difficult to find an image that captures cyber sex that's funny but not being too offensive. It took me hours to find this. So most of us, when we think of cyber, we think of awkward conversations in AOL chat rooms with people who may or may not be the actual age that they tell us they are. And we don't think of something that's serious. We don't think of cybersecurity, right? For many of us, when we hear the word cyber, we think of age, sex, and location. But the fact is that for the people that matter, the people in power, right, for them, for them, cyber is real. Cyber is the real deal for people in DC. Cybersecurity is the only part of the Defense Department budget that's going up. It's the only part of the DHS budget that is going up. It's one of the few things where legislation actually moves in DC. Right? And so by us ridiculing cyber, by us thinking that everyone who says it is an idiot, we're not part of the debate around cyber. we're absent. We are absent. We let them set the agenda around cyber because we think that they're too silly because they're using the wrong words. All right, so this is the director of national intelligence, famously lied before Congress. And so James Clapper, in March of 2013, he was testifying before the Senate. He said, when it comes to the distinct threat areas in their annual threat assessment, this year it leads with cyber, and it's hard to overemphasize its significance. Here we have the top national security official in the United States telling the Senate that this cyber thing is the biggest threat this country faces, bigger than terrorism. These cyber threats put all sectors of our country at risk, from government and private networks to critical infrastructures. Again, like with this language, the average non-tech savvy senator or member of Congress, they're thinking, oh my goodness, this cybersecurity stuff is insane. This is a huge threat, we gotta do something. And we're not present. We're not present in that debate, and we really should be. So you may think, okay, well, the reason that these people are talking about cybersecurity all the time is because of money, and that's entirely true, right? There are defense contractors that are advertising 0 days on the subway in Washington, D.C. You have the ex-director of NSA who leaves and is now offering himself at $1 million a month to clients. Cybersecurity is big business in D.C., no doubt. But so what? So what that it's big business? What matters is that people care. What matters is that if you're talking about cybersecurity, you get the meeting. People listen to you. People think it's important, right? Cybersecurity is important in the eyes of policymakers, which means we should be using the language of cybersecurity for all the stuff that we're doing. Every technology that we're building, we should be pitching as a cybersecurity technology. And the reason for this, cybersecurity is moving through DC whether we like it or not. And let me explain sort of how it works. You have these ex-generals, these ex-government officials who go and work for defense contractors. And every week, they go to a meeting with congressional staff to pitch them on how bad this cyber stuff is, how big of a threat cybersecurity is. And on one hand, one side of the table, you have this senator or this ex-general or this ex-senior government official who doesn't really understand technology. And then on the other side of the table, you have, if you're lucky, a member of Congress who doesn't understand technology, or a 24-year-old staffer who has a political science degree who also doesn't understand technology. And so what that means then is that they never get into the details. They never get into the details of saying this particular technology is a threat to our cybersecurity. If the meeting is a success, the best possible outcome is that the member of Congress leaves with the feeling that China is attacking us, that cybersecurity is a massive threat, that we need to dedicate more money to this, and maybe that the company that had the meeting, that their technology might be useful. That's it. We have one person who's lived in DC there laughing. It's true though, this is actually how it works. What that means then is, this is happening every day. Every single day, every single week, these meetings are taking place in hearing rooms, in congressional offices, at committees. Every single week, someone is coming in and saying that cybersecurity is a huge thing. Now, if we try and stand there and say, in fact, this cyber stuff is bullshit, they're gonna ignore us because there are too many people saying that cybersecurity is a problem. We cannot push back against that. But what we can do is say that these other things are a cybersecurity problem, and that the technology that we're building can protect us all from cyber threats, right? We're not telling them that the briefings they've gotten from ex-generals are wrong. We're just telling them that there are better things that they can do to keep us all safe, right? So remember, the average member of Congress doesn't understand technology. This is Ted Stevens, for all of you who don't recognize his face. And you know, he became famous for this whole internet as a series of tubes thing. But my guess is the way that meeting went down is you had some tech person come in to do a briefing, and he was describing the internet as a bunch of pipes, right? And pipes is actually like a fairly accurate description. We talk about pipes in the tech community. And Stevens is like sitting there sort of, you know, drawing on his notepad, and that one word sticks in his head. And then he gets on the floor of the Senate, and he's giving a speech about the internet, and pipes becomes tubes, and suddenly he's a laughingstock. right? But all he retained from that meeting was that the internet somehow involved tubes. And so all we need to do is somehow convince them that our technologies protect cybersecurity. Right? We don't have to go very far because they don't go too far into the weeds. So traditionally, those of us who work in this space, the lawyers, the lobbyists, there are good lobbyists, we actually employ some, the advocates, those of us who work in this space, we have a real uphill battle. Right? We go into a meeting with a member of Congress and we say, you know, you shouldn't pass legislation requiring backdoors in encryption technologies. You shouldn't pass laws requiring companies to retain records of everything their customers do. You shouldn't pass laws prohibiting what people do with the technologies they buy. And we find some people who are sympathetic to this message, but there are an awful lot of people in Congress whose first priority is public safety. And in their eyes, there's a trade-off between public safety and privacy. And there are some members who really care about privacy and civil liberties and are willing to go gung-ho down the privacy and civil liberties path. But there are many others who care a little bit more about public safety. They're worried that the next time there's an attack, their vote no on a bill will come back to haunt them, that they will be primaried, they'll lose their election. Right? No one wants to vote no on a piece of legislation that will make it more difficult for the police to catch the bad guy. And that's the reality of the world. We can only convince so many members of Congress to put privacy and civil liberties ahead of national security. But what if it's a security versus security debate? What if instead of trading off privacy against national security, there are different security threats that the members have to weigh? What if adding backdoors to communications networks at the behest of law enforcement also opens those networks up to compromise by hackers? Well, suddenly it's a security versus security debate. What if when you retain large amounts of data, that data then becomes an attractive target for criminals? Oh, suddenly data retention is a more complex issue, right? And so by embracing the language of cybersecurity, we can shift this from a debate where we lose to a debate where we might win. Many of you may have heard of the four horsemen of the information apocalypse. There are these trump cards in political debates, right? So, you know, pedophiles and drug dealers and terrorists. Like, it's really, really tough to push legislation when members or pro-law enforcement people can say that this technology or this bill will help terrorists hide their stuff, right? And traditionally, those of us on the public interest side of the table have always had a bad set of cards, right? We've had the bad facts. All the case law, all the Fourth Amendment case law is drug dealers and pedophiles, right? It's really, everyone's Fourth Amendment rights come from really bad cases with really bad facts. And so traditionally, the four horsemen were not good for our side. But now there's a new horseman, and he looks a little bit something like this. His name is Wang Dong. This, of course, is actually a real FBI wanted poster. This is one of the Chinese military officials who was indicted by the US government. Suddenly, foreign nation state hackers are a huge threat and a threat that policymakers take seriously. Chinese cyber hackers are just as big of a boogeyman as pedophiles and drug dealers are now. And so now members of Congress have to weigh the decisions that pit things that might help the police against things that will help nation-state attackers. This is a much more complex debate for them to have. Suddenly, we don't get steamrolled. So what that means then is that we need to reframe the debate around the technologies that we all care about. Right? For far too long, Tor has been a technology that helps dissidents to protect their privacy online in countries where the internet is firewalled and censored. That's not the case. Tor is not about journalists or dissidents. Tor is a cybersecurity technology. Right? Silent Circle or Signal, two voice apps that encrypt your communications as they go over the carrier's network. These are not wiretap-proof telephone communication apps. These are cybersecurity technologies that protect you from nation-state adversaries using IMSI catchers. You see how this works? Right? TechSecure is not an anti-surveillance technology. It is a pro-cybersecurity technology that keeps you safe where the phone companies have not deployed strong security technologies. Right? We need to embrace this language. Everything we are doing must be cyber. And even if you think it's silly, just pinch yourself and keep saying it, right? Cyber, cyber, cyber. It sounds silly, but in a few years, we're gonna have a case that the ACLU will almost certainly join in some way, where the government will say that encryption, a particular form of encryption, is the devil's technology. It's a demon technology used by drug dealers and bad guys. But now we can say that most, then we will be able to say that most of the web is using HTTPS. We will be able to say that government agencies are using PGP. We'll be able to say that government agencies are using Tor to protect our data from bad guys. And when that happens, the courts will not be able to demonize these technologies. Suddenly using Tor or voice encryption or text encryption or full disk or folder encryption will no longer be suspicious. And the way we get there is through cyber. It's a war. Let's fight this cyber war. Thank you very much.